Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Everybody, and welcome to the Gilluminati Podcast, episode 49, the long-awaited and the long-toiled-on Skinwalker Ranch, part 2.
Also, it's just long.
Yeah.
Like, in general, it's just long.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's just long. Let me get the intros out of the way. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by my two co-hosts, Alex Fasciani and Jesse Cox. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi. Hey.
I've been talking all
day long.
Every day
is the same.
Every day is the
same. Time has no meaning.
You're right. Time has no meaning right now.
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm feeling great. I'm fine. I had some shishito peppers. I'm good. Feeling good.
I jumped from doing 5 hours of D&D right to this. So my voice is like, it's going to die on me. Be ready. I'm not sure how well it could be worse. But, you know, I'm excited. And true, it could be worse. It could be worse. I could keep talking about Skinwalker Ranch Part 2, which I am super thrilled to talk about. But first, I got to hand it over to our local shill, Alex Fasciani.
Yeah, guys, listen, here's the deal. This show is supported by a website, a wonderful website, called Patreon. It's a great site, does a lot for creators, and in this time, nothing is more consistent than a monthly paycheck that we can count on to keep this ship of ours afloat. And you are the crew. So please come to patreon.com/ChilluminatiPod. And you,
who signs up, gets to clean the toilets.
And the last one is a rotten egg. And don't be the egg, because if you're the egg, then you're never going to know whether or not the chicken comes first. Life's oldest mystery, Chilluminati podcast. Check it out. $15 gets you $15 a month. Gets you 15 minutes of extra Chilluminati podcast every single month. You.
15 minutes is not the
actually
did
way
I say,
more.
Did I say 15 minutes? More. I meant 15 minutes, like the last episode.
It was 50 minutes for the last one.
Yeah.
It was a 50-minute small ep.
What a value, I say.
And there's all kinds of different tiers there. If you want something small, you can get like the $10 tier or the $5 tier, $1 tier. But y'all get little behind the scenes things like the show notes, the scripts after they're finished up, the extra shows, all kinds of goodies. So go check it out. We thank you so much for your support. Jesse, it's time. It's time. And I know I call you out every time. But for episode 1, you know, that was the history for you. That was the lay of the land, the history of the world and the Native Ute people and what happened to them in that particular basin, because today,
yeah, no, it seemed pretty factual.
You guys can't see it, but Mathis is making the face that Doc Brown, Dr. Emmett Brown, made to Marty McFly right before.
So to give you,
he flew into the air in his DeLorean for the first time.
We don't need roads.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
To give you an idea, this is episode 2. The outlines that we were using for episode 2. I only got about 50% of episode 2 outline in episode 2 before I was like, I gotta stop because we're just gonna go on forever. So this is likely gonna be a 4-parter. But episode 2 is gonna be focusing on the main family. The family that we talked about in episode 1, the one that moved in 1994, the one that took the land off of that weird couple that had it from the 50s. We're gonna be talking all about that, and particularly two of the most common encounters that they had during their little over a year there. and maybe a few more of the smaller ones, but there's some other ones we're going to save for the next episode as well. So, Jesse, I need you to open your mind. Allow yourself.
Mind open.
Allow yourself to be taken on a ride of unbelievability. And believe,
I have no choice.
And believe as best you can.
Yeah, I mean, I won't guarantee that. 2 out of 3 ain't bad, though.
That's, you know what? That is a majority, and I'll take it. Alex, yeah. I feel like you're already on. We're on the same page, at least.
I'm just excited for what comes next. I'm the guy who liked the end of Lost. You know what I mean? Like, I'm good. I'm ready.
Well, the Gorman family story on Skinwalker. I'm just going to go into it. The Gorman family story.
How dare you. On... That show deserved better.
It did. I loved it.
So much better.
I loved it.
It deserved a better ending.
Me and the guy who wrote the show agree. I promise.
He did.
You and Damon Lindelof.
Yeah,
are
me
like
and Damon. Shout out to
buds.
Damon. I bet he listens. You rascal.
Come with me, boys. It's time. The Gorman family story on Skinwalker Ranch begins in 1994, after they had purchased it from the previous owners that had possessed the ranch since the 1950s.
Did you use that term because it like reminds me of like a ghost?
Ooh, maybe. Maybe I'm just bringing out my creative writer, you know?
Yeah.
I'll never tell you my secrets. Okay. Never. But as we covered in the first episode, this is the same couple in the 50s that had the ranch up until then. They never, ever lived on the ranch, always lived off-site, and only ever visited the ranch once a year to do a property check. The Gorman family themselves were a relatively standard Midwestern family of the area at the time, meaning two very specific things. One, they were Mormons, though they weren't actively all that practicing since they lived ranch life.
They're chill Mormons.
Huh?
Chill Mormons.
They were very chill Mormons. And two, it also meant that they were living like the rancher lifestyle. They had, that's where they made most of their money, as we'll learn about. And for this particular family, there were 5 members that lived on the ranch that, and those are the ones that we'll be focusing on obviously today. First, there was Tom Gorman. He was the father, an experienced rancher specializing in high quality Simmental and Black Angus show cattle. Essentially, the dude knew his cows really well. He knew how to make a buck off of them. His wife, Ellen Gorman, was known to be, quote, highly intelligent with a natural business sense. During this time on the ranch, she worked at a mortgage office not too far out into town. They also had 2 children that lived with them, Tad and Kate. They both would help out with ranch work on the ranch itself, and they were both known to be straight-A students in school. And finally, there was Ed Gorman. That was Tom's father, the patriarch of the family, the grandfather to the children. And he was the one that taught the entire family the cattling lifestyle. He was the one that raised his son with it and passed it on, so on. But the Gorman family was a cattle family through and through. To put it into perspective in how much pride that they took in their work at the time, most of their neighbors and other ranchers were totally fine taking about a 5% loss of their herd through the year. Due to weather, wildlife, bad fencing, whatever. While the Gormans were devastated if they came anywhere near 1% loss of their herd. All of this to say that ranching was basically their blood, and they weren't people who did not know what they were doing. These are people who moved into the ranch and knew very much the lifestyle that they were going to live. They were not strangers to it. At the time of the ranch purchase in 1994... the ranch itself was around 480 acres of cottonwood trees, Russian olive trees, and rolling pasture land that was bordered by a creek. If you headed up north toward the north of the property, the border there was an irrigation canal and a northern border of a 200-foot ridge of red rock and mud that would eventually become known as Skinwalker Ridge, which we talked about a little bit in the first episode. And it's an important note that when it rains out there, the ridge and the canal become impossibly muddy to traverse. Just too much for anybody to try and push through. All this is obviously kind of give you an idea as to the layout of the ranch. And you can actually get a sky picture of the ranch itself to kind of give yourself to really like map out the area if that's something you're interested in.
I'm imagining that it looks like Bowser's face, like Mario Kart or something.
It's just seeing it from the sky. It's just a chomping 2D Bowser face. For me, like, I actually picture more along the lines of, like, your stereotypical JRPG farm that your protagonist starts on, and then the world starts to fall apart, and they realize they're the chosen one, and you go off on your adventure, except this time, instead of having a world-ending event, you have Bigfoots, interdimensional Bigfoots, protecting the family from otherworldly disasters.
Just think about how scary that must have been back then.
Jesse's jaw opened, and his eyes rolled twice.
I'm on the adventure. Keep taking me.
I'm still taking
before
you.
Before I get off this ride.
We're only taking baby steps so far, Jesse. Do not worry.
I know. I'm aware because you've been talking about how they were good ranchers, which I believe has nothing to do with the rest of this.
Well, for some of the things that they run into, you'd think a rancher might be able to understand, and they don't.
Those were some very specific statistics about lost livestock. I'm just
saying. Yes, yes. It's very specific. Now, while one might assume that, like most people who move into a quote-unquote haunted or strange area, that you might begin to assume that it's a slow ramp up. You little things begin to happen, and as time goes on, they become more and more intense. It's
like a movie.
Yeah, like the movie and how a lot of stories go. A lot of poltergeist activity acts that way instead. But instead, for this particular family, it all started almost right away. Kind of weirdly, actually, within the contract itself, there was a little strangeness right at the purchase. The contract for the purchase had bizarre clauses in it. One such clause that was made known is that even after purchase and taking it from the couple, no digging was to be done on the property unless that couple was notified first.
Like if there was like oil or something there and they...
Could be. We don't know. It's just the clause of the contract was no digging unless they are able to get permission from or notify the other, but previous owners first.
No digging?
Mm-hmm.
You have to call the owner who owned it before, even though you own
it
now.
Correct. Very bizarre. Very bizarre clause to have in the contract of a ranch that you're purchasing. Moreover, the ranch itself looked really bizarre. Like it was prepped for an attack of some sort, or was like prepped to weather a storm or some weird thing. The windows
were... What is that? Yeah, all right.
I'm going to go through it. Yeah. I'm not just going to say that's it.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Every one of the windows were bolted shut on this ranch house. Moreover, every single door in the house had heavy-duty deadbolts on both sides of the door. And at the end of the farmhouse, there were large metal rings that they believed but weren't sure, as they would have to be very large dogs, but were believed to ostensibly chain up possibly guard dogs. But the Gorman family wasn't able to tell that for sure. They don't know.
But they never used this ranch?
Correct. Exactly. They never used the ranch. They had a few workers that tended to it occasionally, but nobody lived on it. Like, the owners didn't live on the ranch, and yet the ranch was built and is, like, windows bolted, doors, bolts on both sides. All kinds of weird, weird, weird stuff. And the big metal rings at the end of the property for potentially guard dogs, but nobody really knows. Even if there's weird clauses in the contract, however, it wasn't enough to ward off the Gormans. Would that be enough to ward you off? Out of curiosity.
Don't dig?
Yeah, if like, say that's the only weird clause, but the clause in the contract is, listen, you just can't dig unless you run a bias first. I know you own the property, but that's the clause.
What do they? Can they do? Like, can they, like, sue you?
I genuinely don't know because I'm not a lawyer. I don't know, like, if that's even something that could be held up in court.
I'm just wondering. It's such a weird thing to want to know.
It's one of those things for me to be like, oh, so you were serial killers? You know what I mean? Like, you think you can dig up bodies or something. What do you mean I can't dig up on my own property?
Well, because even if you're buying it to dig on, right? Even if you want to drill for oil on this land, which, like, maybe... You know, based on what you said last time.
You can maybe justify it in that way, yeah.
Right, like, why would you sell it? Like, under what pretense would you sell it where you're like, but I don't want you digging for oil or else I want to charge more?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Know. It's very,
it,
very,
it doesn't
very
even really make sense in that way.
Yeah, it's bizarre. None of this, however, was enough to ward off the Gorman families from moving in either way. And despite a bizarre previous owner who seemed mostly detached from their property beyond the strange clauses, the ranch itself was perfect for their ranching way of life, and getting right into it was their hope. As we'll find, however, those hopes would be dashed almost immediately. If you want to read along, our main source for this particular episode is going to be Hunt for the Skinwalker, as it's really the book that kind of that addresses all of the family's claims. We're going to be going through and talking about some of their claims. We can't talk about all of their claims because there are just too many. So we've picked out our favorites, and we're going to split them over this episode and next, and we're going to talk about, obviously, all of them. But just for those who want to read along, Hunt for the Skinwalker is the main source for this episode in particular.
Now, you said that this family's not actually called the Gorman family, right?
Correct. Their real name, I believe, is out there. However, I don't know for sure if that's what they want. So
in the book, are they referred to as the Gormans?
They are referred to as the Gormans in the book.
Interesting. Okay.
So that is how I'm going to refer to them from now on, just to be safe. But The name is out there. I know the name. You can find the name. And if you have any interest, you could look it up. I don't even know if it's all that private anymore.
Is it actually their first names?
That I am actually not sure of off the top of my head. He simply says the names are changed for the, you know, for their what have you.
Sure.
Their privacy. So, the first sighting would be the one that set the tone for, in my opinion, almost every sighting from here on out. One night, shortly after that the family moved onto the property, Tom, Ed, and Ellen were outside enjoying the night and having a chat with one another. After some time chatting, all three of them saw a large figure bounding across their open field in the distance. After a little examination from the three of them, they all determined it was probably nothing more than a large wolf. There was very little time for them to react, however, before the wolf, who was bounding across the field, changed direction and moved directly toward the family instead. Ed Gorman claims the wolf came up to his chest, and we'll keep in mind that Ed is about 6 feet tall.
He says the shoulders of the wolf are at his like
the wolf comes
pecs?
Up to his to his.
Like, oh,
to his
I thought chest. You meant they like the wolf literally went up to his chest. You mean height wise?
Actually, both. We're getting there.
Oh boy.
Yes.
Okay.
The wolf in height came up to his chest, and Ed is about 6 feet tall. The wolf, however, didn't stop by just approaching them. It walked directly in front of them and up to them, and it threw the family off. This was very bizarre and not natural behavior for what they've seen before wildlife. First, it wasn't acting like a wild animal of any sort, showing a strange sense of curiosity toward the family. Moreover, Ed claims to have felt a weird feeling of calm exuding from the creature. So much so that Ed felt 100% comfortable reaching out and petting this thing for a little while, eventually asking and bringing the others to also come and pet it. Ellen, however, refused.
There would be no
effing way in hell.
If I was the wife, I would be like, no!
Yeah, no,
no!
Way! What are you doing?
Don't you take my kids towards that wolf!
It's insane. To their description, the wolf itself had silver-gray fur and light blue eyes. The feeling of exuding calm wouldn't last, however, as the strangeness of this creature would continue.
Is it okay if I imagine Richard Gere instead of a wolf?
Please do, actually. Come here. He's just hanging on all fours, just naked.
Yeah, like chomping. Ansel Elgort.
I still would be like, don't you go near Richard Gere. No!
He's naked, leave him alone. He's clearly lost and confused. As I said, the feeling of calm would not last, and the strangeness of this creature just would push forward. In an instant, that calm feeling dissipated, and instead was replaced with a sense of unease. The wolf no longer seemed interested in the family, but its attention had been snapped in a different direction and been brought over to the corral, where a couple of prized Angus calves had been recently unloaded, and one calf had stuck its head through the bars in curiosity. The other calf, was clearly the brain here of the two, was hiding at the back of the corral at this point. The wolf, ignoring the family, bounded over to the corral and grabbed the calf by the head, violently slamming the calf's body into the metal bars over and over again as it attempted to pull the calf through the locked doors. And
yeah, that's how animals work.
The calf screamed ridiculously, and so, reactively, Tom ran over, and he began to kick the wolf over and over again his boot, shouting at the thing to let it go. But the wolf completely ignored him and continued to tug on the calf as the wails of the calf became desperate.
This have the two of you seen Tiger King yet?
No, yeah. I refuse. I don't want to be sad.
This is like the entire time he's like, they're a beautiful, majestic beast. I love them. Cut to the one clip of him being like, you son of a bitch.
Pulling a gun on a tiger.
Get the fuck away from me or I'll shoot you between the goddamn eyes.
This is that where they're like, this majestic creature walked up to us and like, get away from her, you son of a bitch.
It ripped her head off of my baby cow.
But Tom, look, it's so pretty. I can pet it.
Now you gotta shoot you between the goddamn eyes.
So as the calf is dying, as it's trying to be,
it's an animal.
Yeah, of course. He runs over to this thing and begins to kick it, shouting at it for it to let it go. But he was ignored. So Tom shouted over his shoulder for someone to bring him his a .357 Magnum. And he did. He leveled the barrel at the creature, and fired four shots into this thing.
Directly into the wolf.
After the third shot, it let go of the calf's head, and on the fourth shot, it began to walk off. With clear gunshot wounds, the wolf showed no signs of injury in its movement or the way it acted. No fear, nor any blood. Still not finished. Tom then shouted for his .30-06.
Was his second nearby? Who, like, waiting in the wings?
With his behind him to keep their weapons out, I guess.
They're like his party members. They're like carrying his shit.
Yeah, you got it, Tom. You got
two-handed sword. Attend me.
His second nearby. Holy shit! That is a great. That's a great visual. I just can see a guy sitting there with his box, holding his musket in a box.
Magnum.
Blam, 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 blam.
30-06.
Shotgun.
Oh, got tears coming out of my eyes, dude.
Then the wolf, his skin, like, there was, like, metal, and it filled back in the wounds, and then it turned into Robert Patrick, and he started running, and his hands turned into knives.
Bum, bum, bum.
So Tom, shouting for his 30-06, was handed it, and then he shot the wolf two damn more times. The wolf, with flesh actually being ripped off of its body, simply trotted off, unimpressed with what was happening, no longer interested. Tad, one of his boys, grabbed the Magnum his father had replaced with
his second.
Yes, Tad, no!
It was Tad. Tad grabbed the Magnum that his father had replaced while Tom hung on to his rifle, and they chased after the wolf.
Why on earth would they chase this invincible death wolf?
Well, I mean, think about it, dude. You just unloaded six shots into this thing. Flesh is careening off of it. And it just is like, I'm bored. I'm going to leave.
Flesh is careening.
Yeah. I would be like, whoa. I would be like, whoa, Tad. We are lucky to get away with our lives. Let's go home and have supper now.
Well, that line is surprisingly on brand for what happens in the minute.
Okay.
So Tad grabs the Magnum. Tom hangs on to his gun, and they go chasing off after the wolf. There was no blood to follow. No blood had come out of it, and it wasn't bleeding.
But what time is it?
Sorry?
What time is it?
This is like night. They're like at nighttime.
Okay. All right.
All right, mate. It's fine. Moreover, the creature left inch deep tracks and was still incredibly easy for them to follow, even through the Russian olive trees where it actually went off to. More than just the tracks, they could also catch blurs of silver leading them through the woods, always just within sight, but never catchable. It felt as though, they claim in the book, that it was just leading them, like toying with them, always just
blurs
out of sight.
Of silver?
But, yeah, it moved in a weird speed, but they were always able to keep up with it. It looked like it was moving fast, but it was
so
never
out of sight.
So they're
saying this is the wolf.
This is the wolf they're chasing. They believe to be chasing the wolf here. However, once they reached the creek, the track stopped completely, and with no way to track the thing, they went back to their ranch. Tom looked to his son on their way back and said, "Look, son, I can't explain what happened. I'm not going to even try. Let's just forget that this ever happened and have a meal in town."
There you go. That's what we're talking about. Ed, Tad, come on.
With his father actually taking charge and kind of laying that, Tad says that he felt a sense of comfort knowing that his dad was at least taking charge, because he could not also comprehend what was happening there.
That. Just a scary
let's
night
go
with
get
a wolf.
Liquored up in town.
Yeah, let's just go drink this thing off.
ScaryNightWithAWolf.com.
A few days later, however, a small bit of information would come forward that allowed the Gormans to accept what they saw and write it off as nothing more than a wolf. One of their neighbors claimed that they had a large pack of wolves that lived on their land. And according to the Gormans, that was plenty enough for them to just say, "It was a wolf. I don't want to deal with it anymore."
They're like, oh.
Or it was.
Oh, you guys
werewolves.
Got invincible wolves? Oh, okay. We ran into an invincible wolf last night. I shot six bullets into it. Actually, four bullets and two shotgun shells.
However, that would not be the only wolf sighting that would happen. But before we move on to this wolf, the more wolf stuff, Large creature encounters were something that happened regularly on Skinwalker Ranch, and we will talk about a couple of others next episode. For now, we're going to stick with the wolf. As I said, this would not be the only wolf sighting the family would have. After having moved into the new ranch, Ellen, as we said, was in need of a job, and so she found one at a mortgage office in town that she would commute to and work in. One day, on her way home from work, Ellen claims to have seen a wolf similar to the one that they saw on their property. It was so large that it stood tall enough for its head to actually be over the car when it stood.
Like,
and her car was a gray
on four legs?
On like four a dire legs, wolf?
As it stood on four
like a giant ass beast?
Yes. Like it stood on four legs and its head was over the car.
Did it look vengeful?
Impossible. What was she in? Like
a
Geo
gray
Metro?
Chevette.
What the hell?
A gray Chevette. Whatever the hell that is.
she was in like a Dodge Dart.
A unicycle. Yeah,
yeah
Dodge
like
Dart,
a Fiat.
A unicycle.
Yeah. Like, what the hell kind of car was she in? Bigger than the car? I do not believe
a Pinto.
This sighting was, just so you know, this sighting happened about a half a mile before she was home. About half a mile outside of Skinwalker Ranch.
Was it in another car, and that's why it is like...
No.
Was it on a motorcycle? How is it bigger than a car?
It was standing on the side of the road, and it was just taller than her vehicle.
Was there no one else out there?
There was one other thing out there, actually. Another canine. An all-black dog that she claims had a head too big for its body, but still not quite as big as the wolf that was there.
What a
oh,
weird...
that's like the training montage where like one guy is learning to become a wolf and they're like, your head's too big. And he's like, I'm trying.
He's like, you see that, son? It. That's the face of the woman who we're going to kill tomorrow.
the dog in the background. Oh, boy, daddy, I'm just so hungry.
Yeah.
So after seeing those wolves, she slammed on the gas and just rushed home. She then further reported the sighting to the tribal office in town. But they explained to her that there were no wolves in Utah, and the last one had been shot in 1929.
No one would ever say there are no wolves in Utah.
Well, this actually
in the whole
does,
state?
No, this actually tracks because the following year
is Mormon. And wolves hate Mormons.
No, they weren't all killed.
Tracks.
They were all shot, but. In 1995, the following year, they would actually transplant a pack of gray wolves into central Idaho. And those wolves, that pack would grow so big that they would then migrate to Utah over the years. And Utah would then have a resurgence in a wolf population. But this happened the year after. Like, Idaho didn't get their wolves until a year after all of these events happened.
So
the office suggested that she saw coyotes, but Ellen vehemently denies it.
So,
but she also said it was the size of a car. So yeah.
The person that I would be on right now is that neighbor who was like, I have a pack of wolves on my property.
Right. Yeah, because there's just conflicting information.
I would be calling them and be like, who the fuck are you? What are you doing? Tell me about the Invincible Wolf Children.
The Invincible Wolf Children?
In 1963, I had an affair with a wolf. And those
right
are my wolf
moon.
Children.
Just as the mother was being eaten by a werewolf, she had her babies.
Oh, God. Well, that wraps up the wolf encounter. One of the many...
Does it?
Yes.
This
wraps up the wolf encounters. We will talk more about large animals that are seen, but in timeline and sticking with the timeline, other things, after that whole thing, that was the last time they had a big wolf encounter, and instead, other things began to happen around the ranch as well.
Well, at least she got a sense of closure.
Exactly, right? At least she got that they was coyotes.
They were like, that wasn't real. That was coyotes. Forget what you saw. It wasn't real.
Exactly. Now, Jesse, I know we said in episode one, remember, everything we've ever talked about on Chilluminati is going to come around.
It's true. Oh,
we're about to move into something else. A couple of other things, in fact.
I can't wait to see how this all fits together.
If a bizarre wolf-like cryptid wasn't enough, the Gormans also began to experience typical minor haunting-like events. That same year, Ellen Gorman was taking a walk in what is now known as Skinwalker Ridge. And while she was walking, she felt a large object rush by her, followed and accompanied by a rush of wind that would accompany something large moving fast behind
it. Naruto.
Right, it was probably Naruto.
Yeah.
But when she turned around, there was nothing there.
That reminds me of the...
Maybe
like,
it was just the wolf running really quickly.
It's possible.
It was a blur of
with
silver.
With that in mind, within the house itself, things also suddenly started to get weird. small things started to go missing. Kitchen implements, Tom's tools, books, brushes, etc. Drawers would be left open, cabinets swung open. Occasionally, they would be found in entirely different parts of the home. Other times, they would return to where they were missing from in the first place, and some just never were found at all. All of this lining up with what is typical in the beginnings of poltergeist-like activity in a place of living or home or town. But, much like everything and every other occurrence on this farm, things would only stay minor for a very short while. In 1994, the Gormans' nephew, Dave, came to visit the Gormans on their ranch for an extended stay. Dave was a city kid and only 14 years old. He was sent out to get some, quote, hard work under his belt, unquote.
Never worked a day in his life. His hands were soft as a baby's bottom.
My kind of man, more or less. And the Gormans were fully intent on making him at the very least a competent ranch hand by the end. Just goddamn it, Dave. They just wanted him to be at least like do the basics, repair fence, you know, herd the cattle, the basic stuff. But poor old Dave wouldn't even make it to the end of his trip before he decided he was getting the hell out of here.
Oh, I thought he died. I was like, oh my God.
His head was bitten off by a wolf whose head was too big for his body. And he never played another PC game again.
Poor Dave. Never lived his full nerd life. For starters, Dave was scared of the dark. Terrified, in fact, and refused to do any work after sundown. And since Dave was so scared of the dark, Tom and Tad decided to take him out on a property check around dusk while the sun was still at least somewhat up and there was sunlight that still spilled onto their property. The three men were making their rounds when Tom said he saw what looked like an RV on his land. Not having any trespassers, or rather not wanting to have any trespassers on their land, Tom went toward the RV to tell them to leave and chase them off. Maybe some kids parked in an abandoned ranch that's never seen to, you know, F around or have a good time or something completely different.
The mystery machine was there.
Yeah, mystery machine. They're there. There, they finally are there. Scooby-Doo and the gang. But as he approached the RV.
Having sex. What?
What? Sorry, what?
Nothing. Oh, that's okay. Just mystery machine.
Hashtag Shaggy Smoke Weed. Spread the word.
As Tom approached, the RV began to drive away and away from Tom. So the three men decided to give chase and continued to give chase to the vehicle to get the people off of their property. When they realized something very peculiar.
There was no driver.
No.
A Weimaraner was driving the car.
It was actually the wolf. No, as the car was driving across the bumpy field, the headlights never moved. The two headlights in the RV were not bouncing up and down as the vehicle went across the open plain as they expected it to, looking as though they were gliding across the ground instead.
Like it had like perfect shocks, basically.
Yes, like
it
was perfect just shocks, like just straight.
But you said the vehicle was bouncing.
Well, is it as it should be bouncing?
Like, if it was driving, it would be like...
If it was driving, yeah, it should be bouncing.
Right. I thought what you were saying is the vehicle itself was bouncing, but the headlights were like...
My bad.
Perfectly fine.
No. Yeah, no. The vehicle, as it should be bouncing, crazy. It didn't look like. Instead, it made it look like everything was driving, gliding across the ground. And as they continued to chase, they realized the RV was completely ignoring their fencing throughout the property. And it just drove seemingly through all of their fences and stuff that were standing in the way.
We're talking about a ghost RV?
And once they reached the wire fence and the olive trees, the lights of the RV lifted gently off the ground above the olive tree line and disappeared into the trees. After continuing to look for a few more moments, it eventually raised above the tree line and they could see the silhouette of the thing in the sky. And they described it as simply, quote, oblong and refrigerator shaped. Unquote.
Like one of those... Mothman UFOs.
Yeah, like a tic-tac-shaped UFO?
Yeah.
What?
Call him a long boy here on Chiluminati.
A Chilumalongi.
Yeah, a Chilonganati.
A Chilonganati.
Chilonganati.
Hell yeah. I almost called you Dave. You're not Dave. You're Jesse. Jesse. Are you okay?
He's acting like Dave. He's acting like Dave Gorman right now. You're being a real Dave Gorman right now, Jesse.
Yeah, why you got to be such a Dave?
I'm letting you know. That sounds like bull patoots. There's no way that they were like, we went out and we saw this thing that it not only was it an RV, but when it started driving away, it looked like it was floating and went through fences and took off and was a UFO.
Okay, but why would they have said that if it didn't happen?
Right?
For a lot of reasons.
I'm just saying, like, they assumed it was an RV, probably because it was oblong shaped and it maybe was just sitting on the ground. But what is being described is a typical, like,
UFO.
UFO, typical tic-tac UFO encounter. I don't like that.
This is like the monster mash of Chilluminati.
A typical UFO. Okay. All right.
They're all here. Yeah.
They're all here, man.
Wolf, the small tic-tac alien.
Yeah,
I hate this. I hate where this is going. I know it's going to be like, and then Bigfoot showed up. And then
Bigfoot first episode.
The Mothman was there. Mm-hmm. And then the aliens, they kidnapped people there.
I love
and then
you, Jesse.
Ghosts and the aliens.
I only say this to keep you interested. While you rattle off Bigfoot and the Mothman, those are legitimate sightings on Skinwalker Ranch.
Bullshit. This is not real. This is not a real thing.
The Mothman sighting, just very briefly, was they saw him in a tree and they flashed the light up at it and it screeched at them and spread it.
Yeah, just very briefly, it was like,
and that was
it. Yeah,
it was. It was very much like, we'll talk about that
There's
time.
A little Mothman-shaped cloud behind
Jesse,
when you
left. Those types of sightings
Bull
do happen here.
Shit. This is not real. This is people trying to sell bad land in the middle of nowhere. And they're just like, there's aliens, and then idiots buy it. And now an idiot did buy it.
No.
And they have a TV show with
the Adamantium Corporation bought it, okay?
Right, the Adamantium Corporation bought it.
Or the Adamantium Group, or whatever they're called.
Right. I'm such a fool.
Adamantium Holdings?
Yeah.
Something like that? Yeah, anyway. Needless to say, after this encounter with this bizarre RV UFO, Dave broke down crying and ended up leaving the ranch much earlier than he anticipated.
Whoa. You're telling me that with all the crazy stuff happening on this ranch, the one that got him crying was the RV that flew? He was like,
this
I can't take it anymore.
That was the first thing he saw. He went back home and
he played. Dave is a little bitch. I'm going to say it.
Listen,
Dave.
I'm with you, dude. I'm with you. If I saw
they
that,
got wolves that bite people's heads off. They got Bigfoots. They got ghosts. And you're over there like, a flying RV. Game over, man. Get out of here, Dave.
He went home and he beat the entire game of Myst in 2 days.
Yeah, he really did. That was more his speed.
Yeah.
Dave went on to go make point-and-click adventures for the rest of his life.
He was the first person in line to pick up a copy of Warcraft 1.
Yeah.
So Dave ended up going home much earlier, never truly became the ranch hand that the Gormans were hoping to make him. And his parents let the Gormans know that his son would no longer be visiting them on the ranch.
Yeah, because he probably saw their BS and he was going to call them out on it. And they were like, take him out to the
snitches
lion.
Get stitches, son.
Take him out to the flying RV field.
Flying RV. Just a few weeks after Dave's encounter and Dave's departure, though, the Gormans would have another encounter with the RV lights. On yet another walk after sunset on their ranch, the family began to hear what sounded like metal banging on metal.
Robot sex.
They were just robots fucking just in the middle of the field.
It was like, pam, 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 pam.
Exactly.
Yeah, they were like, damn, he's going hard.
The family, curious, went to investigate the sound to discover the same or at least very incredibly similar-looking RV that Tom and Tad chased before, and then it flew off and they gave up on, was back. And after deciding to chase it again and to get it off of the property, it turned off its lights and vanished instead, not gliding away, just disappearing and then reappearing further away. They would then give chase.
Like it teleported?
Seemingly so.
Okay.
They would then give chase, the lights would go out, and then they would reappear elsewhere, further away. And it would do this for a while, bizarrely intelligently toying with them, dragging them across their own property, not really allowing them to get too close, before eventually just vanishing and then not reappearing for the night, not to return for the rest of that night.
It's like the opposite of the Monty Python gag, where the guy's running from the field.
Yep.
Every time they look, it's like farther.
And it really did seem like this thing was intelligently playing with them. Like it knew it was there, and it was just toying with them. Tom was beginning to get frustrated, as these were very regular occurrences around his property. And, understandably, he was also getting angry and a little nervous.
How far in are they? Like, into their, like...
You're looking, we're at this point, we're like 3 or 4 months in.
Okay.
So, like, really only a few months.
So they're seeing
they only
shit
lasted
like...
14 months or 15 months, it was?
So they're seeing shit pretty much constantly.
Constantly and all the time and almost right away.
Like, once a week. Plus and nightly,
And if it's like once a week, big things are happening, the small poltergeist activity is still happening all the while. Things are disappearing, cabinets are opening, like your typical poltergeist activity.
And what's the nightly, it was like nightly UFO sightings or something?
These lights specifically, these RV lights, this is the beginning of what would be something that would be messing with him regularly for the rest of his stay on this ranch.
That's
these
crazy.
Are the beginnings of the regular UFO sightings.
That's because he's harassing them. They just came to camp
out,
and they were like,
"Get
off our property!" And they're
like, "Motherfucker, get off my property! I don't care if you're damn aliens. Get your fucking..." Just like, and he just
chases them.
Yeah,
so the aliens were like, "All right."
They were like,
and they just messed with them.
Getting so freaking annoyed with
their sonar.
Yeah,
they're teleporting. It's there from the Jetsons.
Oh, gotcha. The Jetson teleporting.
Two pings, Mr. Alien. Boom.
It's Sean Connery in there. Young Sean Connery is in there.
He's just up in that spaceship.
Yeah.
Tom, obviously getting frustrated, angry, and a little nervous, because these events were happening constantly, and there had been no answers, only more questions. And seemingly more things were coming out to play with the family, toy with them, frustrate them, and scare them. The animals, and the lights, etc.
I would be buying motion sensors. I would be buying turrets. I would be playing turret defense with my ranch.
Tom began to spend his nights outside from this point on trying to catch proof of these mysterious lights that he dubbed intruders. Even moving his cattle to a different part of the ranch because the lights began to mess with his cattle. They would appear in the middle of his cattle, raising up. He would hear his cattle begin to make noise, and so Tom would go to investigate. And lo and behold, there were the lights dancing around causing chaos, and he would chase them off, trying to catch
them.
That's
so insane to me.
It is insane. He got so frustrated that he actually moved the cattle to a different part of the ranch entirely for them to graze. And almost frustrated with his decision, the activity of the lights increased and began to annoy him and his
family.
They were
like trolling him?
Yeah, and even more so. Being amongst the cattle, being out there in the field, he'd go chase them, they'd run away. The incidents were constant. If they weren't nightly, they at least seemed to be often enough to just get under his skin. And instead of being run off of his property, Tom just got more annoyed and would just chase them down even more. And he would just shout at them, try to get proof of them, pictures of them, but they, again, acted intelligently and just seemed like they wanted to fuck with them all. Jesse? How you doing over there?
It's convenient that he couldn't get a photo, but please continue.
It's hard, dude. They're lights. Come on. They can tell.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're asshole lights, so, you know.
He's a rancher, not a photographer. Give him some slack.
Right, goddamn. One particular winter, that winter, after another night of being outside trying to catch these things in some way, Tom was on his way back to the house, failing to catch anything and having to deal with the aftermath of a blizzard anyway. The whole ranch was covered in snow, and that required a whole lot more work. But on his way back, Mr. Gorman saw something. Not the lights this time, but a craft, still. An aircraft, about 30 to 40 feet long, with short, matte black wings, no more than 20 feet off the ground.
The X-Men jet
had arrived. He also goes on to note that he doesn't believe he would have seen it were it not for the snow, making a very clear outline on the ground to draw.
Like, he thinks it would have been undetectably stealth.
Yeah, and he believes he would not have seen it if the snow wasn't there, like catching, you know, moonlight and stuff like that to show a shadow. The vehicle Tom describes seemed like a smaller hybrid of the F-117 and the B-2. But it made absolutely zero noise. which is strange because the F-117 is notably incredibly loud.
I mean, even the B-2 is a fucking jet.
That's also true.
My mom works on that plane, actually.
Oh, damn. That's cool.
That's a loud plane.
Exactly. And this thing was 20 feet off the ground, making no noise whatsoever. Moreover, to separate it from those military like planes, it also had multicolored lights dancing in a recurring pattern on the snow. Tom continues to say,
Richard Dreyfuss is there.
Man, you guys are reference monsters, and I'm just not.
You haven't seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
I have not.
You haven't seen
the end of that movie?
I know. I haven't seen it.
Of all people, just do yourself a favor and like watch.
Yeah, I know that movie got like studied Project Blue Book and all this other stuff to make the movie.
You would lose your mind.
It's
That's
a pretty good. It's good.
I should watch it actually. It's I'll good. Watch it this weekend.
Yeah,
actually,
it's good.
I'll have a little bit of time.
Lucky
week,
you.
Can be like wop 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 wop, and I can do it back to you.
Ooh,
then we
I'm
can
excited.
Have our own conversation.
I'm excited. So it had multicolored lights dancing in a recurring pattern on the snow. And Tom then says that it looked like the craft's movements were slow and intentional, going back and forth over a small part of the land, what we now know as, again,
Stealth Bomber
Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
sorry. And it seemed like, Tom said, that it was looking for something. So Tom went over, reached up, waved his hands, and made a whole bunch of noise to get its attention. And it seemed like, at the very least, it worked, because lights went out, and the ship slowly flew off, never adjusting at slow speed, however, and still never making any noise.
Can I ask you a question? Like, you have to be real with me on
this. Oh, no.
When we're done,
uh-huh.
Will you at least have some attempted explanation of why this ridge is so important to all of these things?
I think the devil is in the details there.
Like, is there has to be a reason why.
Why Skinwalker Ridge is famous?
No. Why all these things go like are there to begin with?
Well,
it's famous because all these things are there. But why are all these things there?
It might be a reality flap.
Yeah, flap.
I forgot about this last time. About reality flaps.
I love you, Jesse. I promise.
I forgot. We had talked about reality
a
flaps.
Thinning, always, Jesse. A thinning.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the last episode, as we always do, there will be the theory section. Everything from the best scientific theories we can muster to the absolutely insane nonsense that we also all
want.
All
right, look, I'm waiting. I can't wait for that because that's Jesse, right now. All you're telling me is more reasons why I need to know
Jesse,
what is important
do you
about
see
this.
Do you see this?
See what?
This in the camera.
Your hand?
Yes. Take my hand and trust me. I am going to guide you through Skinwalker Ranch as your partner. And as your guy.
Here's the thing. Incredible. You have to trust your partner. And I'm letting you know right now, we are starting this relationship off from a bad foundation.
Yes, we've been in this relationship for 2 years now, and you don't trust me?
Dude, I would fall on Mathis for sure.
Thank you.
No, I'm like, nah. No, I don't know.
You know what? I appreciate the honesty, Jesse. I appreciate the honesty.
I'm just letting you know. I feel like you'd lead me into some, you know, like pet this wolf. It seems friendly with its blue eyes. No, I'm good.
Okay,
dude,
but
you
know,
pet dire wolf.
They ended up shooting.
No.
They ended up shooting it with 4 Magnum bullets and 2 rifle bullets.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me is. This once peaceful wolf that then was like, oh, I'm hungry. You then shot with a bunch of shells, and now you're like,
well, it's killing my
cat. Fine. That thing won't come back for vengeance. Get out of town. If I was there, it'd come for me too. No, I'm good.
Jesse the succulent calf.
I'm back there with the mom just like, oh, hell no.
Yeah, what are you doing? Oh, my God. Hilariously enough, after that ship went away, it seemed like Tom was starting to get used to all of this. All the tone that I could get from Tom reading was just exasperation and frustration.
He just wanted to get back to ranch and his cows.
He just wanted to goddamn ranch, dude. He just wanted to ranch.
This is a simple guy we're talking about here, Tom
Gorman. Exactly, a simple great rancher. And to top it off, Mrs. Gorman would also have an encounter with a similar type of ship. Ellen says that she was driving home from work as she used to do. when she saw the ship that we just described outside of her car window. She sped home, clearly upset at seeing something, calling for Tom about what... And then she went to the phone, sorry, and called Tom to tell her about what she had just encountered. Tom was out on business doing, I guess you would assume, like selling cattle and calves on town and whatnot. And Tom had to calm her down and get her inside, eventually getting home and helping calm her down. When Mrs. Gorman then described what she'd saw, it was reminiscent of the ship that Tom had seen a few days prior. Sorry, I'm losing track of where I'm reading for some reason. I'm like losing my... It's late. It's late.
Yeah,
all right?
It's late.
Bear with me here.
It's the witching hour. The perfect time to record Chiluminati.
As Tom started to calm her down, what would appear outside in their field other than the two lights belonging to the, quote, RV, unquote? Ellen was incredibly confused, as the only way onto the ranch and to get to where she was seeing the lights would have been to come past the house. But she saw nothing, and these lights simply appeared. Worst yet, and something to tie into something else that we've discussed, a figure then appeared.
In the house?
No, at the RV.
Oh, okay.
Because it was still somewhat light out, and Ellen could see the RV had a desk attached to the side of it in some way.
What?
What do you mean?
What?
A good question.
Like a bunk bed that has like a desk underneath?
Like a desk. Like she could see a desk on the west, like a brightly lit RV with a desk on it, in it, or on it.
Like a wooden office desk.
Yes, like an office desk.
What?
She saw a figure come into view, sit at the desk for a little while.
Uh-huh.
Before rising and heading to the door of the house. As it got closer, Mrs.
Gorman... Can you imagine this alien's just like, he goes to the desk, filling out paperwork, and he's just like, oh, god damn it, I gotta go over to see these people. Can't even believe this shit. All these forms for me. All right. And he's just like going through the paperwork, and he stands up, and he's like, let's get this over with. It starts marching down.
I'm gonna scare the shit out of these motherfuckers. Like, it's like Monsters,
Hi,
Inc.
Hi, Mrs. Gorman. We're here to perform a survey on the abduction haunting scenarios that we gave you the past few months. If you just go through this questionnaire with me.
The most powerful source of alien energy is the screams of human beings.
Actually, if you want an actual answer, it's orgone energy, which we as emotional beings with souls are able to create, and that's why our planet is so valuable to harvest for the aliens. I just knocked over.
Orgone?
Orgone energy.
Why does it sound like it's in calisthenics?
Look it up. O-R-G-O-N-E.
I mean Dianetics, not calisthenics. What the fuck am I saying?
You are thinking at the speed of thought right now.
Dude, I totally am, dude.
You are out of control. No, time out.
I'm just a silver beam, baby.
I know we're getting towards the end of the episode, but just Google orgone energy. I'm going to do it for you. Orgone energy.
Or like Oregon? Like Oregon?
O-R-G-O-N-E.
Oregon Trail?
It also is the secret of the pyramids and why the Egyptians created pyramids, because it helped harness the energy.
No, it's not.
The Oregon?
No, it's
not. It's like a 1950s product. Oh, no.
Oregon energy is a pseudoscientific concept variously described as an esoteric energy or hypothetical universal life force.
Okay, so wait. So how come...
Yeah, right.
How come on the Wikipedia page when I look it up, the picture is of a chamber made of wood with a cushion chair inside of it?
Well, that's an Oregon energy accumulator, dude. You go in
so
there...
So you sit in there and you just get
sit.
Right?
Yes, correct.
You
correct.
You get small, you know?
Alternating layers of organic and non-organic materials inside the wall supposedly increase the orgone concentration inside the enclosure relative to the surrounding environment.
Oh, the organs, yeah.
It looks like if John Proctor did, like, sensory deprivation training. Like, it looks fucked up.
That's what the aliens want, dude. They want our orgone energy. Anyway, back to the
episode.
Get
out of there, Tijuba! Get out of there!
Go, Tijuba! The aliens!
Oh, God.
Get in the desk! Hide behind the desk!
Meanwhile, oh, fuck. As this figure walked up to the door and came into better view, Mrs. Gorman could actually see the thing a little better.
It was Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh.
She says this person was 7 feet tall, wearing all black.
It's not a man in black. This is bullshit.
It is.
This is exactly. This is bullshit.
A man.
There's no way.
He was wearing a visor and knee-high boots.
A visor like an 80s like Cyberman visor that, or like that, a like poker player's
like a
visor?
Yeah, like a hat visor, which is also there. That has also been seen in Men in Black Encounters because they don't understand fashion particularly well.
Like a gambling visor.
Yeah, like a gambling visor.
Will Smith made it look good.
That's true. That's true. I was wrong. At this point, she had only called her husband on the phone, and he had calmed her down over the phone. However, when this figure arrived...
So she was alone there when this guy rolled up and was like, hey.
When the figure arrived, she panicked, and he dropped what he was doing and drove all night to get home by the time to get home to take care of
his wife. Okay, yes, and what happened?
The figure eventually left, and the RV lights dissipated. She never answered the door and never interacted with it. She just ignored it.
What a cop-out.
The following morning, the two of them went to where she believes she saw the RV lights, and she saw footprints in the mud, about 18 inches long, a prominently round heel, but no discernible boot marks, which is curious, as she certainly saw boots. And while that is only the beginnings of the interactions and encounters the Gorman family had on Skinwalker Ranch, more giant cryptids... A psychic who comes to hang out in the field and reach out to aliens and other ghost-like activities are still yet to be spoken about.
Shut up.
On Skinwalker Ranch.
Shut.
And I am not kidding you a single bit. Obviously, we also have to talk about their cattle, the storms that would happen, and the missing cattle that would go, as well as the mutilations that happened on their ranch. There's so much more to cover. This is, without a doubt, going to be our longest series at easily 4 episodes.
You know what? It's easy to make 4 episodes when you can just bullshit the entire time. Yeah, and then the Men in Black, literally everything we've talked about, you're like, yeah, then they showed up too. This is nonsense.
The best part is that you're starting to like recognize their calling cards.
Yeah, you really are starting to understand. You called it Men in Black before I said it was
like,
Men in
Don't
Black.
Don't say it's the Men in Black. And it's like, it was. And you were like, get out of here.
You're starting to learn, Jesse. But you got to keep in mind, too, this is what's so strange about this place. This is what makes Skinwalker Ranch so unique. Everything seems to happen here. Everything.
But why there and not like Fort Lauderdale? Why would all these
animals... Why would it be in Fort Lauderdale?
But to answer your question,
this vacation.
Is that an Oregon depository?
Though, it's not just the family that had experiences here, and that's going to be all about episode 4 probably at this pace.
No, I'm saying I don't know. I'm accepting the premise that everything goes there.
Yeah, but why?
Why there? What is so specific
about that?
We'll
get there for sure.
You're saying Oregon energy?
We'll get there for sure.
No. I'm not actually saying Oregon energy. I'm not saying that at all. No, we'll get to the theories. I can't spoil you, Jesse.
If the aliens wanted Oregon energy, they would just get in a wooden closet with a chair in it, and it would
At the end of this, the whole thing is like, they're all aliens. Don't you get it? The wolf, the Men in Black, the Bigfoots, they're all aliens.
I will tell you this. And without wrecking Mathis's like plot reveal, I have heard theories about this very thing you're asking about. So I will say that.
Okay.
There's so many good theories.
I'm hanging in there.
I'm sorry, but Jesse, we're just going to – basically, I'm putting a doorstop on the open door to your mind, and I'm not just – I can't let it close right now.
Oh, shit.
It's going to stay open for at least another 2 episodes. So let it feel the information flow into that open door.
Yeah, no, the river's flowing.
See what's through.
Fish are laying. The scary door. Eggs. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming along with me on this ride, boys. This is going to be
fun. I'm jacked.
We're at the bare minimum halfway, but maybe more.
Jacked.
Like a man-sized wolf.
I'm
as jacked as a father yelling for his .30-06 rifle.
Tad, get me my rifle.
Tad, I'm about to snipe this wolf up close.
Thank you guys so much for listening. If you guys enjoyed it, we'll be back next week with another episode of the Chilluminati Podcast as we continue to explore Skinwalker Ranch. And we'll have a mini-sode for all you people who want to go above and beyond and who have been supporting us over on Patreon right now.
Right after this.
There's a mini-sode.
What did you think of the mini-sode compilation? That was good, right? That's what you get. You get one of those every time. Patreon.com/ChilluminatiPod.
Crazy. And also, people who want merch, we still got hats, shirts, all that good stuff over on the Yeti. Go check it out, yeti.com, and you just search for Chilluminati, and it'll pop right on up. And as always, if you just are enjoying listening, dropping us a review is always a good way to show your support as well. If you want to reach us, our socials are Mathis Games for myself, Fasciane A for Alex, Jesse Cox for Jesse, and Chilluminati Pod for the podcast. And the subreddit goes by the same name, Chilluminati Pod. You can drop your stories. And if you are part of the Patreon, make sure you jump into the Discord. There's like a huge community over there. They've got community game nights going on. They've got a community book club going on over there and a bunch of other stuff. It's
all
crazy.
All that and more at the Patreon.
And more at our Patreon. We're going to go. We'll see you in the next one. Goodbye, Peace. Everybody.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.